Oh, snaps!
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, good Friday morning, everybody. I'm Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and where friends don't let friends feed kibble. Well, we know what Friday is. Friday is Dr. Judy Jasik Day. How are you today, Miss Dr. Jasik?
I've never been called that before.
Miss Dr. Jasik.
Miss Dr. Jasik. But, well, you know, it works. I've been called worse things, so I'll take it.
Yeah, I have too.
I'm okay with that. You know, I'm doing good. I'm doing good, you know, just you know, plugging along one day at a time, you know, finding ways to try to change the world and all that. Just little stuff.
Well, I think you are. We're getting messages, you know, from vets coming in. If you know of a vet that would like to start turning the corner, start getting out of the box, start really healing pets, you want to mention Dr. Judy Jasik to them. Because I think, Dr. Jasik, what's difficult for people is they don't even know how to get started, right? So how do I get out of this box? I've been doing this. This is my belief system. This is my training. And something's telling me there's a better way, but it's very hard to get out of that box. So I think what you totally bring to the table is you've walked this path, right? You've already encountered these issues. You've already dealt with the boxed in mindset and the people telling you, you can't do this and you can't do that. You're finding that's not necessarily true, right?
Oh yeah. I think one of the biggest things that's been lost in medicine in general, and I've experienced it personally in veterinary medicine, is just this ability to think logically, to look at a patient and to sort of look at the big picture and see what's going on instead of just falling back on, oh, well, I was taught this, you know, I've got to go back to the textbook and this is my training and that is what I need to do. And that's the, you know, the only thing that is acceptable. I think this art of like looking at a patient and trusting your observation. You know, I think we've lot like I've seen a lot of things in my decades of practice where I know they're true because I've seen them over and over and over again. I don't need a research study to tell me what I've seen in my nearly 35 years of experience. I don't need a research study to tell me that that's true. I know it's true because I've seen it. I know pets do better when they eat raw diets as opposed to kibble and when we treat them more naturally and support the natural healing ability of the body. I mean, I know that 1000% to be true because I've seen it. But it seems like a lot of veterinarians now, they just put the blinders on. A pet, say, for example, gets sick after a vaccine. Oh, well, you know, the pharmaceutical rep told me that that can't be the vaccine. So it's got to be something else. And so, you know, they just discount the fact, well, we might not know what it is, but we know for certain it couldn't be the vaccine because the pharmaceutical rep told me that vaccines don't cause these things. So even though they're observing it, I remember one time I saw a pet have a seizure. I gave it a rabies shot and it had a seizure before it left the clinic. Just made me sick. But so you're going to tell me that you don't think there could be an association there when it happens, like right afterwards? But those types of things that seem glaringly obvious are ignored by a lot of the profession. So it really comes down to how you look at patients and how you approach, you know, managing disease. Are you focusing on the disease and suppressing symptoms? Or are you looking at you know, the general health of the body, and, you know, acknowledging that the body has an amazing ability to heal and supporting that rather than just attacking the disease. So it is a mindset, and man, I am just dying to teach some more vets, because I think if some young veterinarians could see how effective this is and how well it works, this approach to medicine, they'd be super excited about it. I just got to find the people that want to go down that road.
Right. That aren't afraid. Right. Mm-hmm. So you've got to have big bison balls of courage, as I always say, mm-hmm. because you're going to get pushback in this world. I mean, if we have seen nothing else in the last two, going on 3 years now, it's that there was no pushback in the beginning. Now we've got pushback, and we're seeing that great things are happening because of courageous people. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what is it? Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says something about, you know, you can't mandate your way out of tyranny. Is that what he says? Something like that?
You can't comply your way out of tyranny.
Comply your way out of tyranny. Yeah, that's brilliant. You can't.
You can't. It doesn't work, because that's exactly what they want. You got to push back. I just love, you know, this story, these truckers parked up there in Ottawa. Like, yeah, we got enough money to sit here for a year. You know, like they're just.
Oh, no. No, Dr. Jasek, Dr. Jasek, I can't say it. You're racist. Those truckers are racist. Come on.
Oh, yeah. They heard that one. They're racist, and they're beating people in the streets and all that stuff. They're violent. Yeah, they're violent racists. Yeah, I have heard that.
I'm just not certain that people are that dumb. I hope not. I hope they're not dumb that they're buying into that. I mean, that, come on. Drives me crazy, the craziness. I'll tell you what else is crazy. I also just read another story. Anybody that thinks that Dr. Fauci is a good guy. Okay. Did you hear that now the information's coming out? Investigative disclosures are showing that NIH animal experimentation is continuing, injecting beagle puppies with cocaine.
Oh, jeez. I did not hear that.
Mm-hmm. That's the latest series of taxpayer. You, Dr. Jasek, are funding this beagle experiment. I'm funding it. We're all funding it. Nobody asked us if we wanted it, but we're funding this, pumping up these puppies with cocaine. Yeah.
Why? Like, what are they? What's are they? You know, just
here's what they say:
for fun, or because I wouldn't put it past him.
They say that this experiment was to study the interaction between experimental drugs and cocaine by strapping puppies into a jacket contraption that maintains an infusion of cocaine into their veins while they are dosed with another drug.
Jeez, that's just sick.
And this was a study to evaluate the cardiovascular safety of a drug administered via an oral gavage and intravenous drugs.
So why the cocaine? You're testing the efficacy of the drug. Like, most people that are going to be taking heart medications are not at the same time doing cocaine. So what's the purpose behind that?
Right. They're testing it. This is what the NIDA says. They are to test a drug to treat cocaine use disorder. The FDA has said they do not support and they do not need to test on dogs, that they're are alternatives, and they don't want them testing on dogs, but they continue to do it with increasingly large amounts of whatever the experimental drug is to see at what point they get sick or die. They have fallen back on bad habits and relied on continuing to poison puppies instead of seeking more efficient and effective ways to get their drugs approved.
How do they know that this is even relevant to people? Like, we're not beagles. And so how do they know that testing these drugs on, you know, beagles or rodents or whatever animal they're deciding to test them on, that it's going to even be relevant to for people. I tell you what I've learned is I'm reading this book that Kennedy wrote about Fauci, and Fauci has just, he has claimed the narrative. He has so much control, and he controls so many people in all these government agencies because he holds them over a barrel. If anybody speaks out against them, he has enough power now to ruin them, to either kill them literally or ruin their careers, destroy their credibility. So nobody will cross him. That's part of the problem. Nobody will speak out against him because they know how much power he's got, his hands in all these government organizations that should be regulating these things. But he has gained so much power and so much pull in the government that people are afraid to cross him. And that's why this stuff can continue to go on. It's really sick.
It is really sick. And if you listen to Dr. Artis, who talks about the whole remdesivir, and that Fauci knew that remdesivir was toxic. And what did they do? They demanded that that be the treatment in the hospital for COVID-19. So we've got all this information. I don't know, at one point it may, you know, be used so that we can, you know, make him pay. I mean, I think every pet owner and every human being, if they knew what this man was really doing, they'd be fine with us hanging him in the town square.
I think they should give him remdesivir and put him on a ventilator and let him know what, you know, what it feels like. I actually heard that they're approving that now for like newborns. The babies are they're 7 pounds or older. They're testing them for COVID when they're born. And if they test positive, they're given remdesivir. And an infant, I mean, it's just sick.
But you know what, Dr. Jasek, there will be people that say, oh, it's great. My government wouldn't hurt me. This is good for my child. Okay. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, people get sick from the shots and sign up for more. Well, it's a good thing I had the shot because I might have been a whole lot sicker. And I see the same thing in pets. I preach about this connection between over-vaccinating pets and chronic illness. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to hear that. Like, you mean the fact that I've been vaccinating my pet every year could be part of the reason that they're sick? And it's like, yeah, exactly. So I think people don't want to acknowledge things that might make them feel guilty, but I don't say that to people to make people feel bad or make them feel guilty or, you know, make them feel like a bad person or bad pet parent. I want them to be educated so that going forward, they understand that when they take their pet into the vet and they say, oh, your pet's due for rabies, you say, no, because I think that might be causing the disease that, you know, my pet has, whether it's cancer or autoimmune or, you know, some other chronic inflammatory condition. You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday about a kitty that, you know, chronic GI stuff, you know, which is fairly common in cats, but I'm trying to kind of pick apart, you know, what's going on, what might be causing this. She said it's been like a whole life, you know, for as long as she'd had the cat, it was a rescue cat for years and years. And so finally I asked her, well, what have you done, you know, with as far as vaccines on your kitty? And I almost didn't ask the question because a lot of people like in this area have indoor cats and just don't vaccinate them. And she said, well, I only do what's required every year. So she's been vaccinating this cat every year.
And every year?
There you go. Yep. Because some clinics will do that, even with rabies, which, you know, technically should only be every 3 years. Some clinics will recommend it every year. And it's, again, it's a business model. It is not a health model. It is a business model. It is a way. And I have sat, I mean, I'm not just making this up. I have sat in business lectures, like you go to continuing education and they do, you know, practice management stuff. And as a way of generating more revenue, you require certain service or recommend certain services every year. you recommend things that will get people in the door. That's what this is. That's why they recommend a lot of these vaccines every year. You know, they went to 3 years on the rabies, you know, where the rabies vaccines, a lot of them, and there are actually some rabies vaccines out there that are only labeled for annual use, which again, it's just so that they can sell, you know, sell more vaccines, but most rabies vaccines now can be given every 3 years. And then the standard, you know, core vaccines can also be given every 3 years. So they're a big hit for the vaccine industry. So then what do? They start pushing Bordetella and Lepto every single year. You know, again, they had to come up with something to scare people in their door every year. And so many people get that little postcard. Oh, your dog's due for Lepto. They don't ask, does my dog really need Lepto? Go and ask the veterinarian. Why does my dog need Lepto? You know, what is my dog's actual risk for this? No, they get the postcard and they just, you know, we got to quit being so dang obedient. And people get the postcard and just go in. They don't even question to start questioning everything. It now more than ever.
Absolutely. I was talking to somebody the other day about Lepto and they said, well, now, wait a minute. I had a friend whose dog died of Lepto and it was horrible. I said, true. They could. However, it is so rare, right? And the underlying issues that your dog will face if they get the Lepto vaccine, it's not worth it to me.
I stopped recommending that vaccine a long, long time ago because the reaction rates were so obvious to me. Dogs, you know, they get Lepto vaccine and people would even know, like, yeah, I get that Lepto vaccine and, you know, my dog reacts. And by the way, it's not okay. If your dog has a reaction to a vaccine, it's not okay to keep vaccinating them and just give them Benadryl next time. You know, that's what a lot of vets recommend. Oh, just give them a Benadryl before you bring him in next time and it'll be fine. Like, no, your dog is going to continue to react. And a lot of times they get sensitized and react worse and worse with every vaccine. So don't fall for the, oh, just give them Benadryl. And Lepto is also, it's treatable with antibiotics. The problem is sometimes the early signs are kind of subtle. So it can sometimes be overlooked, but if it's caught early enough, it is treatable. And I have, you know, leptonosodes, which is the homeopathic way to protect. So if you're really worried about it, you have a perfectly safe alternative to protect your pet and against the Lepto and not risk the side effects of the vaccine. So there are options. Like, just come on, people. Wake up and think and ask questions and advocate for your pets. Don't just believe what you're told and don't just do what you're told. Good God, I've never done what I'm told, what I've been told. Ask my mom.
I don't either. All right. So we're talking about reactions. Well, let me ask your reaction level to this. So, you know, Rachel Ray. You know, Rachel Ray, Dr. Jasek. Rachel Ray is a cook on TV. She's got cookbooks and blah, blah, blah.
She's got a dog. She's got a dog food out there.
She's got a dog food out there. And here's what Rachel Ray says. She says, Nutriche, which is the Rachel Ray. She says, Nutriche demands the utmost in food safety and quality from our suppliers. We maintain rigorous testing to ensure ingredient and product safety. That sounds good. Doesn't that sound good?
Mm, it sounds lovely.
That sounds lovely. Here's the problem, folks. Here's the problem. There is a lawsuit against Nutriche Just Six dog food. Now, this is, you know, Rachel Ray's lamb meal and brown rice recipe, which Neely and I just did a podcast on rice, and you heard that, which is don't feed your dog rice. But here's the deal. Their whole thing is we only have six ingredients, right? We only have six ingredients in here. So it's a very limited ingredient. All right. Well, thank you, Rachel Ray. It all sounds very wonderful, but Just Six dog food is supposed to include, what is it supposed to include? Well, the ingredient listed on the label for this dog food, excluding supplements, they say, so Just Six is a little bit misleading already, right? Because they're going to add in a buttload of supplements. But here's what the six are supposed to be, Dr. Jasek. Lamb meal, brown rice, ground rice, dried plain beet pulp, chicken fat, and natural pork flavor. Well, all that right there is nasty. All right. Mm-hmm. So we got that. But here's the problem. They did a DNA test, and guess what they found in the dog food?
Jeez.
Dog. They found dog. There was the DNA of dog in the dog food. You know, how did the DNA of a lamb-based dog food include dog? And they're saying, well, we don't think we're ever going to really get an explanation, but it's in there, right? It's absolutely in this dog food, and so is horse.
Oh, geez. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I say more things in there than they're disclosing on their label.
You think?
You know, they're not really meant to eat their own. So I think there's a lot of variables there that would potentially be really, really scary.
I'm sure that Rachel Ray probably just sold her name to whoever actually does the manufacturing of this particular brand, whether that is Mars, whether that is Diamond, you know, whatever the company is. But I would have to, you know, read more about this, but I thought that was so interesting that, you know, you've got all this nice, pretty picture. You've got Rachel's face on there. You've got her signature on there because this is great for dogs. And you and I would say every bit of that is crap, but because she is a celebrity, a person of some type of authority and on TV, we just believe them.
And she doesn't, just because she's on the bag, doesn't mean she knows anything about dog food. Like you said, she's just selling her name and her face. Doesn't mean she knows diddly squat about pet nutrition. And, you know, things like this are just marketing, you know, like, and this is another thing people need to be really careful about. You know, you hear, oh, your pet has allergies, try a limited ingredient diet. What does that mean? You ask somebody like that says, well, my pet's on a limited ingredient diet. Well, what does that mean? Why is your pet on a limited ingredient diet? And why did you choose a food with those particular ingredients? Again, people don't ask those questions. They're like, oh, limited ingredients must be good for my dog with itchy skin because, you know, there's less chance of it having an allergy.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know,
that sounds good, but it doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah. What does it mean?
Anything. It's a bunch of gobbledygook.
Yeah. All right. So don't feed your dog nutrition. Don't feed your dog this crappy ingredients. First of all, if you turn the bag over and look at it, it's crap. Okay. It's CKS. All right. I want to ask you one other thing before we go today, and that is about high blood pressure in dogs. One, here's the first question. How many times do you actually see high blood pressure in dogs? How often?
It's actually pretty rare. I mean, it's not really even a thing that I tend to, you know, look for or regularly measure.
All right. How do we test for high blood pressure in dogs?
Same like you do in people. You put a cuff on their little leg and with a little blood pressure machine and usually they're automated now, you know, blows up the cuff, you know, until basically you sort of cut off the circulation just for a moment. And then as soon as it, like how much, or what is the level of the pressure where you start to like hear the pulse again.
All right. Can there be high blood pressure at some point, but not for life?
Sure. It's always going up and down. And I think that's a big problem with measuring blood pressure, like in veterinary clinics, because as soon as that pet walks into, you know, most vet clinics, they're stressed and the blood pressure is going to go up. And especially true in cats, but I think it's also true in dogs. And it also matters, you know, it's not, you know, there can be some you know, operator error too, where, you know, depending on the limb, or do they have the cuff put on properly? Or if a dog has a really, really hairy leg, like a heavy coated dog, like a Northern breed or like your German Shepherds, you slap a blood pressure cuff on there, you're going to get an probably artificially elevated result, because that cuff is also pushing on all that fur before it can even get to the, you know, get to the blood vessel. So that will throw things off. So there's a lot of variables. So ideally, you'd want to be doing different limbs. It also matters where the limb is in relation to the heart. It's like I always learned that where the blood pressure cuff is should be close to the level of the heart. So say you're, you know, taking a blood pressure on a dog that's standing where the blood pressure cuff is below the level of the heart, those values are going to be higher, as opposed to, you know, if the limb is above the level of the heart, then those values, you know, could be lower. Just like, you know, if a person sometimes stands up too quick, you know, it's like, oh, they changed their orientation too fast and their blood pressure drops for a little bit and they get lightheaded. And that, you know, is the type of thing that can happen. So there are a lot of variables, and yes, it absolutely goes up and down all the time. It's something that's totally dynamic in the body.
At what point would you put a dog on a high blood pressure medication?
I would need to see that probably the blood pressure were like the systolic blood pressure. So for like a number, it probably would have to be consistently over 200. And again, measured consistently. So maybe in different circumstances, you know, might have the owner try it, measuring it at home, because people can buy, you know, what my mom bought, a little blood pressure monitor at Walmart, like $30, that, you know, she uses to check her own blood pressure. And so sometimes just reducing the stress or being in a less stressful environment can help. So, you know, but so I would verify it that way, check it on different limbs, you know, maybe try a different size cuff just to make sure that it's consistent.
Okay, so I have a customer who has a 3.5-year-old English Mastiff with congenital kidney disease, which she found out about this congenital kidney disease when she had the Mastiff spayed in June of 2020. She feeds a raw diet from us, 100% raw. She said that the kidney values are stable, but she basically wanted to know, should she be doing anything else for this pet? My question was this: what else is going into the pet's body, right? Mm-hmm. What else is going into the pet's body? The response was, she's taking a probiotic that she varies the brands. She's feeding a fish oil, a vitamin E, cosequin, quercetin, hemp oil, and the blood pressure medicine, which is, I'm sure I'm not going to say this right, amiodapine?
Oh, amlodipine, yeah.
What is your thought about that set of protocol that this fabulous pet parent has going on right now?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'd like to see the lab results, because sometimes I see dogs diagnosed with things that the lab values are just so slightly elevated that it doesn't really, it's not anywhere near as serious as they're saying. And sometimes they're put on pharmaceuticals sort of more preventatively. Well, let's put your dog on this drug just to keep things from getting worse, you know, basically is what people are told. But how bad are things really? I mean, I would want to see the lab results. How did they diagnose this congenital kidney issue? Was it just on the blood work? Did they do an ultrasound? Like where is that coming from? And what are they hoping to accomplish with the pharmaceutical, with the amlodipine? Is it really warranted? Because I think sometimes, well, actually I think a lot of times, veterinarians feel like this obligation to prescribe something. Like, well, we got to diagnose something and we put a name to it, and then we have to prescribe a drug to treat it, because that's what people expect, because that's what we do. We write prescriptions. We're doctors. We have to prescribe something. And, you know, maybe they don't. Like, is that drug really A, helping, and B, what kind of side effects are you subjecting that pet to for the rest of its life? Because this is a young pet. And like, I don't ever use pharmaceuticals like to prevent something from getting worse, because I think they just do more harm than good in most cases. If there's something critical going on, that, you know, like amlodipine is used for, you know, for certain types of heart conditions and things like that. So if it's specifically indicated to treat a certain condition, then that's one thing. But say, okay, they start this medication and they keep monitoring the dog, and the kidney values don't change. Say they stabilize. Well, and they're going to say, well, see, the drug's working, stabilizing them. Well, how do you know that wouldn't happen anyway? Because this was an incidental finding, it sounds like, right? They took the dog in for the spay and they found this kidney thing going on, whatever they diagnosed. But the dog was probably healthy, or they wouldn't have been taking her in for a spay. So are they... I question diagnoses all the time, and I'm always looking at lab work, because I see a lot of pets that are diagnosed with kidney disease or kidney failure. And I look at their lab work and it's like, you know, things are just a tiny bit elevated. Like I saw, this was a kitty. It was like a 17-year-old cat and its kidney values are a little elevated. That's pretty much normal in my book, because the kidneys are not going to be functioning like they would in a younger pet, you know. But in a young dog, I think we have to be so careful about what are we subjecting that dog to for the rest of its life, because conventional medicine doesn't typically, they don't like to take dogs off of things. Like, they'll start this medication and they'll say, yeah, you just keep your dog on this for the rest of its life, kind of no matter what. Well, how do you know the dog needs that? Or what are the potential side effects? I bet you they didn't talk to this pet parent about what adverse effects could happen for this dog staying on this medication.
Well, can the amlodipine affect the kidneys and be worse than the kidneys?
Well, you know, the kidneys have to process everything that goes on in the body. So everything you put in the body, you are going to be stressing either the kidneys, the liver, or both. The body has to break these things down and eliminate them. So if it's a drug that's, you know, cleared in the urine, you're making the kidneys work harder to eliminate it. And is there really an upside? I honestly don't see, or I've never found any pharmaceuticals that are very effective for kidney issues. There's a lot of herbal things that can help support kidney function, help the kidneys function better, and of course, good nutrition and all of those things.
So we do, again, we want to question, we want to get a second opinion. We want to see what, you know, what other options there are. But I thought this was interesting because sometimes we do see, you and I have heard from pet parents many times who have gone in to do a spay or a neuter, and then we get these elevated numbers, mm-hmm. and they don't necessarily mean anything. Now, I obviously don't have the information from this pet parent in regards to how many times have we tested. Has this been consecutively up? I do know in this, she does say that she's been able to stabilize those, you know, kidney values. Right. So maybe they just automatically went down. So we'll see. But again, I was wondering about this blood pressure, because I know that it's overprescribed in people. I don't think mm-hmm. it's a great thing in people. I think it has terrible side effects. We do know that diet, if you really, really, really paid attention to diet, exercise, lifestyle can have dramatic effects on our blood pressure. You know, if we would just really get solid on what we're doing instead of relying on a pharmaceutical that has so many side effects. All right, everybody. Well, that's our podcast for today. You can work with Dr. Judy Jasek. Miss Dr. Judy Jasek. You know, when I put the miss in front of there, I miss say your, I don't, it's weird. I can't even say your name. But you go to ahavet.com. Any vets out there that are listening to the podcast today, Dr. Jasek would love to connect with you and help you in any way that you need to help you help your pets live a healthier life. Certainly, we can help you get on a species appropriate diet right here at Raw Dog Food and Company. I have a new form on my site. If you go to my contact page, there's a button that says still overwhelmed. Click here. And if you will fill out that information, you know, we'll help you get on the right food. If it's a medical question, we're going to refer you over to Dr. Judy Jasek at ahavet.com. If it's a food question, how do we get you started? How much you want to feed? I got you covered. Just go to Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and where friends don't let friends feed kibble. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.